So this week I've been working on the game I'm running today. Later tonight I'm running a Roll for Shoes game, my first ever, which if you guys haven't heard of or seen, we've done a bunch of those previously on our channel. It's a very rules-light RPG.
It's almost a no-rules RPG. It's very few rules.
It has just enough rules to make it a game, I think.
It's a game that heavily relies on having a good group of players who are imaginative and creative. And here at Saving Throw, we're lucky to have many of those. So on our last marathon, our chat was kind enough to donate enough so that we did an NPC game. So we're getting all the NPCs from our previous games that people like and putting them together for one wild night. And I'm combining Roll for Shoes with a game I'm playing all the time right now called PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. So I'm combining those two things together to make an RPG that's going to be wild and survival-based and antics and personalities all melding together for one big thing. I'll probably talk about how it went next time.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I think that'd be really
interesting. I'm very nervous, though, because Jordan here has run all the Roll for Shoes games in the world. Probably 95% of them are run by him.
That's that might be true.
That might be true, yeah.
And it's some pretty big shoes to fill, so I'm pretty nervous. He's playing in it, so I'm happy about that.
I'm excited to see what it's like, what a game of Roll for Shoes is like to play. I have never actually played Roll for Shoes.
Okay.
I have only run it. I've never played, so this will be an interesting experience for me too. And I'm excited. You've put a lot of like really cool sounding work into this, and I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Jordan Pridgeon has run one once, but you didn't play in it, right?
He ran that on Hyper RPG.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've got two people.
That's right.
Playing who have run it before.
Yeah.
Because Jordan Pridgeon is also playing.
That's true. Wow. Okay. More pressure. Great.
How about you guys? No pressure at all. I've been mostly, like, I am currently in the middle of a season of Wild Cards right now, which is the Savage Worlds Deadlands Reloaded show that I run on Saving Throw on Friday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific time. And it is, it's taking up a lot of my mental space. I was realizing the other day, talking with Megan, I have run a lot of home games, but I've never run a campaign that's gone this long. Mm-hmm. I've never run a game that's been this consistent and gone this long. So I'm kind of charting out like new territory as a GM. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm not just telling the beginning of a story. Like, now I have to like keep telling a story. This is interesting. This is cool.
Honestly, even for me as a player, this is probably the longest, other than Black Bag, the Call of Cthulhu show we have on Saving Throw, this is probably the longest I've played in an ongoing game too.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. It's different. Because I keep thinking, like, we keep going up in level and I'm like, okay, so eventually we're going to, like,
eventually
stop?
Everyone's schedule is going to break down and we're going to, like, not play these characters anymore, right?
Oh, yeah, that is how it always happens. I feel like we always get to maybe level 7, and then it's like, well...
Oh, no. You guys have never gotten to level 7 in any game I've played. I think the furthest you got was level 4 in a D&D game, and then it was like...
Oh,
and that was, like, that was pretty intense that you guys got that far.
It was at least level 5.
Nope. Nope. Never happened.
Oh, my God. Wow. Well, I feel like I've learned something new about myself. I've never played above level 5 in D&D somehow.
Yeah, I don't think you have.
Jeez.
But anyways, yeah, that's what I've been up to. How about you, Megan? What have you been doing this week game-wise?
Well, I mean, the fact that I live with you, it kind of, you know, it was all wild cards in the air all
I'm
the
just
time.
Trying to...
you guys are married and live together?
Yeah.
I know, right? We decided to do both.
We're a modern couple in that way.
I learn a new fact every time we do this podcast.
Also,
that's
we have the
here.
Same bank account.
What?
I know.
Is that legal?
Get out of town. No, we do. We do.
I don't know if it's legal. We didn't check. We should check. Anyway.
We don't have a lawyer.
But yeah. Wild Cards does take up a lot of time. I obviously can't help you plan the the storyline and things like that, but I try to do as much other that I can do. But I actually started up prepping or trying to prep this Magic and Mischief game that I'm going to be running the end of this week, actually. So my first time GM. Jordan Garav Domzuk will be playing in it. And then two of our... Jordan runs a Savage Worlds home game that's set in the world of Secret World, if you've ever played that MMO, which is awesome. It's really cool. But the two players who play in that, our friends Dennis and DeAndre, will also be playing in the game. And they're great. DeAndre is the best laugher you've ever met, so you guys get ready for some laughing.
He makes you feel like you're the funniest person in the world, and it's awesome.
He does. It's fantastic. Anyway, but it's interesting because Jordan and I started... He kind of has tried to help me figure out how to even begin, like where to begin to prep a game. But it's weird because he can't know too much.
Because I'm playing it.
And also, I felt like we were sitting there and I was just like getting anxious and I was getting like irritated. I'm like, I don't know.
See, you say that, but we had like a real brief conversation about how to get started. And then you were like, wait, I have an idea. And then you just started writing stuff down in your notebook for a really long time. And I was like, do you want to talk? You're like, no, I want to roll.
Yeah.
I think you're going to be great.
Well, that's interesting though, because what we're actually going to talk about today is some fears that first-time GMs have running their first game.
Ah, yes.
That's the topic of our discussion, so let's dive into it.
It's apt. Let's do it.
Let's do the intro here real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Here it comes, my first official intro. I'm going to kill it. We are a trio of gamers discussing different perspectives on games and offering our own suggestions and advice to help you play or run your own games at home.
Yeah.
I am Gaurav Gulati. And I am one of the three hosts on this podcast.
Yeah.
Who are you guys?
I am Jordan Capes Callerman. I am also one of the three hosts on this podcast. Yeah.
And I am Megan Caves, and I am actually the third host on this show.
Well, we're all here.
Yeah.
We're all here.
Everyone's here. I think that means we can do a show.
Let's do it.
We're all present.
Fancy pants.
So yeah, like Gaurav said, we're going to talk about some common fears that GMs have, or at least some fears that we had, when we were starting our journey as GMs. And since, Megan, you are about to run your first game very soon, why don't you start with the thing that you are most afraid of going into this?
Well, I think one of the major things I'm afraid of is, so as a player, specifically, you know, with role-playing or decision-making even, you're only dealing with one person. You know, I'm just dealing with my character as a player, and then the GM's going to go and deal with another character, and I can just sit there and relax and think of the next thing or focus on what everybody else is doing, whatever. But as the GM, I mean, you are the one who everyone is responding to. There are no breaks for the most part unless characters are interacting with one another. And that feels intimidating. It feels like a lot of really tapping into my creative brain, and I'm a little worried that my creative brain will just be like, nope, nothing's there. Yeah.
So you're afraid of choking?
Yeah, essentially I'm afraid of choking. I'm afraid of somebody presenting something to me and I go, I don't know what you need to do, or I don't know what to say, or I don't have an interesting character to respond with you, or however you want to put that. That's a lot of what I'm worried about. It's like essentially the spotlight's always on you in a way, because everybody's looking to you to make the story go forward.
Sure. Well, I definitely have some stuff to say about that, but do you have anything that like jumps to mind for you, like as far as addressing that, Gaurav?
For addressing her fears?
Yeah, like that specific fear as a GM.
Yeah, I mean, keeping things interesting and new so that you don't feel like you're, I don't know, are you afraid of like boring the players, or like you think they're not going to find your hooks interesting enough so that they won't follow through on them? They'll be like, oh, that's kind of lame, I'm going to do this thing instead.
Sure, there's definitely the fear of that, or of them deciding that and going, oh crap, I don't know how to adjudicate that. But I think it's more the fear of, it's sort of like stage fright. It's fear of forgetting your line.
Or like them maybe deciding like, oh, we want to go into this room that you didn't think about or plan for. And then they're like, what's in here? And you're like, a candle. Yeah. There's a candle in the middle of the room.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Right.
Huh. All peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah.
So you're basically worried that being like on the spot, in the moment, your player is going to present you with a challenge that you literally have no idea for, and you just stare at them blankly with your mouth open like some sort of weird fish.
So I do have a tendency, if I get over anxious or I feel like, oh God, I got to be really good, or I got to be really funny, or I got to whatever, my brain shuts down.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I have a tendency to do that. And although I tend to step up when I need to, but there is that worry of like, As a player, you can hide that a little bit.
Well,
but you can't. I don't feel like as a GM.
You can absolutely hide it as a GM, and in fact, I frequently do it. There's a great thing you can do as a GM when you are put in that position, and you literally, like, your brain just will not fire with anything, which is to make it the player's responsibility to tell you what's going on. So if they walk into a room that you weren't anticipating, and they're like, what's in here? You can be like, well, that's a good question. Why don't you tell me? What do you find in this room? Like, what is in this weird supply closet?
Yeah.
What is in this strange basement in the house that you just found the secret door to? And then not only do your players get to take some ownership in creating the world, mm-hmm. a lot of times you can then immediately latch on to something that comes up that's interesting in what they say and then expand on that. So they might go, you know, hopefully you don't have a player that's a jerk that's like, a time machine that's going to allow me to shortcut all the way to the end.
I don't play with those people. I'm kidding.
Well, that's the thing. You have to trust your players to do the right thing in that sense and not break the game. And when you do trust them and they pay that trust off with something interesting, reward them for it.
Yeah. Sure.
Like, tell them, yes, thank you. This is what I needed. You helped me build this world. And they're going to feel part of it, you know, just like this is your world, but you're still part of it.
Right.
You're building it all together.
Right. Because when everyone at the table has ownership of the world, then it's less of a burden on just your shoulders as the GM to create every single aspect of it. But B, it keeps everyone so much more invested because they're a part of the creative process of it. Like Grav was saying, like they're going to be super excited to interact with this random room that you didn't plan for because they helped create what was in it.
Sure.
So I think that's a really good tool that you can use if you find yourself getting stuck in that position at the table, is just like inviting the players to become part of the creative process with you.
Well, I think what I imagine where some of that comes from for me is because, and I've talked about this before, it's a really weird thing that I do, but whenever I'm playing in a game, I get in my head that the GM is not all of the other characters. It's almost like I feel like there are real people that the GM is just like relaying what they said. And so sometimes I can get, like, I react to the people the GM has created as if they're real, even outside. Like, even when I'm playing in a game that Jordan is running, I don't think of it as Jordan and that it came from his brain. But it's like, oh, crap, all of this is me. You know, so there's probably an element of me just literally, like you're saying, I'm putting too much on my own shoulders simply because it's hard to see what it's like on the other side from the player perspective, at least in my mind.
And you'll learn as you go what your strengths and weaknesses are as a GM. Like I'm really good at creating NPCs out of nowhere. Like that's a thing that I excel at. But if you can't do that, that doesn't mean you're a bad GM or like you've failed in some way. It just means like that's not a particular strength that you have.
Sure.
Which actually accidentally sort of segued into one of the things that you had talked about, Gaurav, that was one of your fears as a GM when you were first starting out.
Yeah, so I've only been doing this for like a year or so, and before I started playing D&D regularly, I watched a lot of it and listened to a lot of it. The first thing I actually listened to, I guess, or I watched was Acquisitions Inc.
That's the Penny Arcade stream that they would do at Penny Arcade Expo every year, right?
Yes, yeah. I believe I saw it first at PAX East, which was, I don't remember which year I went, but one of the PAX East I saw it at, and it was awesome. It was Chris Perkins, who's the DM there, and his group of players is great. And I was like, I would love to do this. I would love to be a player or a GM or something. I want to be involved in this. But at the time, I didn't really have anybody interested in that kind of stuff. And I just moved to Los Angeles too.
Okay.
So, and then I found Crit Juice, which is a podcast. And David Crennan, one of the GMs at Saving Throw, runs that, which I didn't know him at the time, but that when I met him from a friend of a friend, and that's how I got involved in Saving Throw.
Oh,
so yeah, it's this weird thing that happened where I was like, whoa, you're the guy who does Crit Juice. He's like, whoa, how do you know that? I'm like, well, I listened to it. And he's like, that's crazy. Come play with us sometime. And so he was another one of my inspirations who I was like, this guy's great. And then past that, I watched some Critical Role and Matt Mercer. I mean, everybody knows Matt Mercer. He's like one of the top names in D&D now. He's great. And so all these people that I've seen run this game so well have been my inspiration. And I'm like, I could strive to be like that. I want to strive to be like that, you know? And at the same time, though, it's a little scary because they've been doing this for years and years, you know? And I don't know if I can live up to those expectations I'm setting onto myself. Like, I'll run a game and I'll be like, well, Matt Mercer would have done way better. He would have had a cool voice. He would have had that NPC prepped. Mm-hmm. Like, but like, I think I that's probably doing a disservice to myself when I shouldn't do that. Like, as a first time GM, like, I shouldn't look up to those inspirations. I should be inspired by them, but don't behold myself to those people to be as good my first time at least.
Right, exactly. Like, like you were saying, those guys have been doing it for years. There's so many things that they've learned through experience, so many skills that they've honed and situations that they've already dealt with that I mean, just give them an edge. Like, the reason they're good is because they've had practice, like doing that. So yeah, that is a whole lot of pressure to put on yourself as a first time GM to be like, I'm gonna run this game just like Matt Mercer runs Critical Role.
Yeah,
because you are going to be disappointed by what happens if that's how you go in. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting to like emulate that kind of like level of expertise and like striving to like get better and better. But like, yeah. Definitely setting yourself up with those expectations as a first-time GM is going to be a huge letdown for you because, you know, maybe through some fluke of some statistical anomaly, like, you'll end up being just as good, if not better, than Matt Mercer the first time you pick up a DMG, but, like, most likely not.
Yeah.
Most likely not.
And think about those first-time players, too. Like, they probably haven't seen as much D&D as you have. And, like, so they're probably going to be wowed at whatever you're doing if they're also first-time players. So no need to go over the top at the start. Like, even if they have seen some Critical Role or some Acquisitions Inc., like, they're not going to expect you to be as good as them. Or at least I hope they don't. I hope they trust you enough to be like, this is your first time. Take us into your imaginary world.
Well, and the other part of that, too, is, like, I think sometimes in getting so focused on trying to emulate what other GMs are good at, you risk overlooking the things that you yourself are really good at that they may not do so well or that they may not do at all. So, like, going in, like, with your expectations sort of measured, I guess, and being able to just sort of see what can come out of you as you start playing is a really good way to sort of develop your own unique individual GM style too. Well, you guys have each talked about something that you're afraid of. My thing that I was most afraid of when I first started GMing, and a thing that I continue to struggle with as a GM, is that my ideas won't be new or interesting or mind-blowing enough to interest my players. Like, I started off GMing for people that had never played D&D before. Like, they had a loose idea of what to expect. I had a loose idea of what to expect, but we're all sort of on the same page. It's like, let's give this a try. But now, especially running games for people on Saving Throw or, like, some of the guests that we have that are, like, hardcore RPG people that have been doing it for years and years, I feel, and I've always felt a lot of pressure on myself to, like, come up with something that's never been done before. Something totally brand new that, like, no one will expect or anticipate. And they'll be like, oh my god, that's the coolest idea. And that is just straight up poison as a GM. Like, because there's only so many stories that can be told. Like, story structure at its base, I think, what's the thing? Like,
there's like seven of them, right?
There's like seven... archetypical stories that can be told, and then everything is sort of like a departure or play on one of those basic structures. So tasking yourself with reinventing the process of storytelling is a gigantic amount of stress that you're putting on yourself. And the other thing is, your players don't care. Like, if you literally started a D&D campaign as a new GM and were like, okay, you guys are all going to be playing as rebels trying to overthrow an evil empire, just like in Star Wars, your players would be like, oh, sweet, I love Star Wars, so this will be fun.
Yeah.
I have a jumping off point for that.
Well, I think that goes back to the fact that, I mean, generally speaking, I think we want to play RPGs because we want to emulate these awesome characters we read about and we watch in movies and TV. We want to be those people. Right. So if you want to be Rey from Star Wars, then you totally want to play in your traditional Star Wars, you know, storyline.
Right.
So it makes sense.
And then the other thing, like, say you follow that idea and that impulse out to its furthest extent, and you're like, okay, here's my new game idea. You guys are all going to be sentient strains of different types of bacteria that are all able to infect mechanical objects and take control of them. So, like, you can become cars or things like that. You risk alienating your players entirely unless you have a very specific game group. And they'll be like, I don't have anything to latch into here.
Yeah.
This is completely alien and strange to me. And nothing about this gives me a solid jumping off point. I don't know what to expect. I'm not super excited to try this.
Yeah.
I think a lot of first-time GMs feel like it's bad to steal or take ideas from other things. Like, if you don't come up with your own unique idea, then you're a failure as a GM, or you're like a phony, or you're just copying someone else. But no one cares.
Yeah.
The most important thing is if your players are having fun. They don't care if you're basically doing Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Like, well, no one cares.
I'd go in the opposite direction. I would say steal everything.
Yes.
Steal everything. Steal it all.
Yeah.
Steal entire plots. Steal entire characters. Do it.
I think for me, along those lines, though, it's less about worrying about coming up with something new and more about being able to make it make sense. You know, like have a story that makes sense, that if there's a mystery or something, that the clues lead you somewhere that actually, like, the players go, oh, okay, I see how that works. So it's sort of along the same lines, but it's more about going, do I have the ability to tell those interesting stories?
Well, that's a really specific scenario, though. Like, a mystery is a certain type of adventure that requires a certain amount of structure and, like, prep from the get-go. Most of the time, again, just like, you know, your fear of choking, you can put some of the burden of the story making sense on the players.
Sure.
A lot of times, if you present them with information, you present them with a bad guy and, like, something that's happening, they'll connect the dots in ways that you might not have anticipated that could be really interesting. And then you can, like, sort of adapt your story on the fly and be like, yeah, well, maybe that is his master plan instead of what I was thinking, which seems, you know, sort of lame compared to what you guys came up with.
You have told me that before, but that I hear what you're saying, but that still, that doesn't assuage anything for me.
Sure.
That doesn't, that, because it's still my, I still have to use my ability to, like, they create something in me to go, okay, I can tie that in this way to make it make sense. Now, I have a tendency to put way too high expectations on myself, and I know that it'll be one of those things
I can vouch for that.
I will just do it, and I'll go, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
But you telling me that, I don't get it yet.
Well, so as a someone going into a first time game, I will say, at your table, if you encounter a situation where the game goes in a completely different direction that you didn't expect and you weren't prepared for, be honest about it to your players and be like, give me 5 minutes. I'm just going to take a break. You guys take a break. I didn't expect this to happen, but I will prep for it. Just give me a second. I need to slow down and think about it.
Instead of
like just going into something like, oh, no, this happens and this happens, because that's just going to go more and more off the rails.
I have a really embarrassing anecdote that relates to this. And this happened in college when I was GMing a game. And Megan, you played in this game, so you might remember this. Maybe you don't. It was for you and one other player.
Oh.
And I had like... You found, like, this really scary door in the sewers, and it was, like, all blocked off, and there are all these warning signs, and, like, I gave you all these indicators. It's like, oh, man, something really messed up is behind this door, so that you guys wouldn't go through it, because I hadn't planned past that point. And you guys were like, oh, man, it's really scary, but I think we should go through the door. And I literally stopped for a second, and then I asked you guys out of character, like, could you guys please not do that? Because I don't have anything planned for that, and I don't know what to do if you go through that door. And that was, like, the worst feeling as a GM, because I was like, let me just, hold on, this is me, Jordan, for a second. I got nothing for this, and I don't know what to do if you choose to go that way, so could you not, please?
I feel like I sort of remember that. What was that?
It was you and Sarah. It was just the two-player game that you guys played.
Yeah.
Okay, I still remember this.
So, I mean, that's not bad. It's just, like, instead of saying no outright, don't do that, and giving them invisible watch, be like, hang on, this will happen.
Yes.
But just give me a moment to process and create.
That is such a better idea than what I did. But, like, still at the time, like, I was still developing as a GM, and I was like, I don't know. I don't know. Could you not? Could you go back to the thing that I want you to do?
You also didn't have, I think we talked about this last time, but you didn't have a lot of, you didn't have any, like, experience as a player with other GMs really before you started GMing. You maybe
that's
did
true.
At that point. But not a whole lot. I mean, and you didn't, as far as I know, Critical Role wasn't around at the time.
I had the opposite problem Garof had. I had no GM inspiration. Like, I was literally, like, just feeling around in the dark going, like, I guess you do this. I don't know. I definitely hit a lot of embarrassing stumbling blocks on the way to that. But that's fine. Like, you barely even remember that. For me, it's burned in my memory.
Right. I get that. But yeah, no, I sort of maybe vaguely remember it, but it didn't stand out to me because I also didn't know what to expect out of it. I was like, oh, okay, whatever.
You were like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So does anyone else have anything that was another fear that, like, maybe they want to address that GMs might have?
I think one other one that sort of came up for me is just rules knowledge. This one doesn't make me quite as nervous. I think for this...
Well, you're running a really... Magic and Mischief is a really rules-light system.
Yes, which helps, but I did that specifically because I hate reading rules, and my brain is just like, oh, I don't know, and it shuts down. Like, I cannot literally read the page. I'll read a page and go, crap, I missed, like, I tuned out half of that.
Yeah.
But there's still an element, even with this one, of being like, okay, but when will I know to ask the players to make a roll? And I consciously realize that that's, I mean, it's me. I decide that. I go, I think this deserves a roll.
Yep.
I consciously know that, but there's still that fear of like, you know, what if, I don't know. I don't even entirely know what the fear is. But...
I wake up in the morning. Okay, will you roll to make sure you do wake up in the morning?
Yeah.
Nope, you're dead.
It's funny. It's those funny little things you just get nervous about. And then, of course, I think about running like D&D or Shadowrun or some other game.
Sure,
that's like,
yeah.
Which
textbooks,
Right? I will never, ever probably do no matter what.
No, don't say that. Don't say
Oh my God,
Once you master a system, even as rules light as that, you might think like, I could go deeper with this.
Yeah.
Do not cut yourself
straight
off
to Shadowrun.
Well, don't,
do that. Well,
let's not get wacky here.
Yeah, not everyone can be Tyler Rhodes on Saving Throw and jump straight to running Shadowrun.
God, what a nut! That's crazy.
But I'll say Garof's whole thing about taking 5 minutes to just be like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to adjudicate this situation. Why doesn't everybody grab a drink? I'm going to look up this particular rule real quick, and then we'll jump back into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely one way to handle it.
Mm-hmm. Well, even that, like, you don't have to do. I would say you could even say. You don't need to know all the rules. You know. I've said this before. You do not need to know all the rules. And two, have a player look it up.
Yeah.
Like, don't feel guilty about that. Be like, I don't know. Could you look that up for me?
Mm-hmm.
Move to the next person's combat round. But
I'm going to do the rest of this. Could you look it up for me and clarify? Just have either one person dedicated or change it around. Everybody's learning at the same time.
True.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's a big book for D&D, you know?
And thinking of your players as your allies at the table as a GM
absolutely.
Is a huge help because like they all want the game to be fun and successful. Like no one's going, oh man, I hope Megan chokes so hard. That's going to be real satisfying to me because I'm going to have a terrible time watching her choke.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, so help have them do that. My personal thing that I do is I will go, I think this makes sense. Let's just run it like this. But I'm going to take a note right now to look up that specific rules interaction before the next game.
Perfect.
And then I'll let you guys know next session how that is supposed to work so we all know going forward. But I will just totally fudge it. I do that in wild cards all the time when things come up. I'm like, I'm not sure how to adjudicate this. We're going to run it like this for right now. And then next time we'll know how to do it better because I've never encountered this before.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I know that. I mean, I know we posted on Twitter that we scheduled this my first GM game, and a bunch of people responded saying things like that, like, "Hey, it's totally cool to pull out a book and look at the rules." And yeah. I mean, and when I'm a player, I don't care if the GM does stuff like that. So it is funny just the expectations you put on yourself. And I think it's like what you were saying, Garof. You want to emulate these people you've seen before, and you're like, I gotta be good, as good as them, or else I'm horrible.
If I want to be as good as Chris Perkins, I need to be writing D&D for like 20 years, like he has been.
He's got a little bit of a head start on you there.
Yeah, okay. So it's gonna be a while.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's time for the question of the sode, and we are re-recording this because our original recording of the podcast got a little wonky.
Yes.
So we're just redoing it. This week's question of the sode comes from the RPG subreddit, and the title of it is, Do You Hate Combat? Just straight up, do you hate combat? And basically they go on and explain that there's another thread on RPG.net where the premise is that basically most RPG combat is boring, takes too long, lacks the drama or stakes of combat in the fiction it's supposedly emulating, and as entertainment goes, it sucks. So what do you guys think about combat in general in RPGs?
Well, I mean, I think it can be fun. It can also be awful for sure, but I think it really depends upon the group playing. It depends upon the game, so what the kind of combat is, and it depends upon the GM and how interesting. Like, I definitely don't enjoy combat that's like Final Fantasy style. You're wandering through, wandering through the woods. Oh, something jumps out at you like every 5 seconds. That drove me nuts in that game. It would drive me nuts and does drive me nuts in an RPG. But combat that heightens the story can be great.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I err on the part, or I can't remember what it is I'm trying to say. I err on the side of laying too much of the, I think, the onus for this on the GM. Like, I think the GM really sets the tone at the table for what's going on in a combat. Like, if you are not interested in a combat for your players, it's very difficult for your players to be interested in it, you know? I think being active and being engaged with a combat encounter as a GM
and kind of mirroring for your players the level of excitement that you want them to feel can really up the excitement factor in combat at the table to a certain extent. I don't think that, you know, that is entirely possible for a GM to manufacture table-wide excitement for a combat, but I do think that can help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and they mention about combat taking too long, and I guess I am one of those players who doesn't like longer combats. I like to keep it short and tight, except if maybe it's like a very end of a campaign boss fight that makes sense when it's a longer one.
Sure.
But even then I try to break it up into like stages sort of.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like a final boss fight in the end of a campaign after like a year of playing, instead of the whole session being one long combat, it'll be like you fight him here. And then something happens, you have to go somewhere at part of a dungeon, then fight him again, maybe he's a little more powerful, and then fight him at the last place.
Sure.
So there's a little more dungeoneering built into that, and it makes it a little more interesting for your players, too. And then they also get a chance to rest in between and maybe re-strategize ideas that they had before that didn't work the first time.
Mm.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, that escalates in a way.
I also think sort of along... well, similar lines. It depends upon how many players you've got at your table. And again, the system.
Yeah.
If you've got, I mean, I hope you don't, in my opinion, but if you have 10 players at your table and you're playing Pathfinder, you better make those combats like you. It's fairly simple because that just takes so long. And also, you know, the players have got to be on top of that, too, to make that go faster. I think that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm not sure about Pathfinder or stuff like that, but I know, for instance, Savage Worlds has some alternate rules that you can use to do quick combats. So if you either don't have the time in a session or like you're running out of time to resolve a combat, there are actually some rules you can find to sort of handle the rest of the combat in a streamlined manner. So I definitely recommend if it's getting bogged down by stuff, consider looking up some homebrew alternatives for how to like streamline combat, or see if there are like some official rules on how to do that as well. I also think a big part of this question, though, is when GMs don't relate the combat to what is going on in the rest of the game. Like, yes. If combat feels completely just out of nowhere, like Megan was saying, it's like, it's a random encounter, here's some guys that come out. I think that can be, like, a death knell for excitement at the table. Like, combat needs to have a reason, and it needs to have a dramatic reason.
Mm-hmm.
So encounters could seem random, and then you could find a connection like, oh, these guys were actually hired to come after us by this other person we've been dealing with. Like, find a way to tie it back to what is going on with the players in the story, and mm-hmm. then combat feels meaningful because it, too, is a storytelling tool, not just a break from telling the story.
Yeah, I feel like, I guess in my mind, combats are climactic points in the story. I guess they don't necessarily always have to be, but they kind of are by their nature.
I mean, it's just a different kind of obstacle, really, for GMs to use. As much as a puzzle or a role-playing challenge, like, combat is another way to challenge your character's abilities and skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. And for combat being boring, I would say, I mean, that's a problem that I think the players at the table could fix, and maybe the GM too, but like maybe describe combat a little better instead of just, I hit that guy with a sword, add a little flourish to it, you know?
Mm.
Add a little more narrative flourish to it and make it more exciting. And if your table isn't like that, try being the one that starts it and see if it catches on.
Sure. Or possibly even, like, if the rest of the table feels combat is boring and maybe the GM isn't doing a great job selling it, consider running a game where combat is not a big factor. Like, maybe you want to do more of, like, an intrigue-style game or an exploratory-style game where combat doesn't become such a focal point. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Megan? Sorry, I interrupted.
Well, I was actually going to say something just along with what Gaurav was saying. But I found my own game in describing, like, what, you know, how I attack somebody in battle, like, just specifically in Black Bag as Birna. It was so much fun to be. I just wanted to stab people so I could describe how I stabbed them with my sword this time. You know, that was, I enjoyed combat for that.
You did get real visceral with those descriptions, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You might be into murder and stuff, so I'd watch out, Jordan.
Yeah, well, no, it's cool. I've learned to defend myself.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, murder, you know, whatever. I mean, you hang out with me too, Grov, so...
Mm-hmm. Great.
Is that
great.
A threat? Are you threatening Grov?
Sounded very threatening, yeah.
No, I would never do that. I would never.
Okay, cool. Well, I think that does it for our question of the sode.
But real
round.
Quick, though, real quick.
Wait,
this,
no, okay.
This poster does bring up a couple of interesting little house rules that they have encountered being used for combat before. So we're going to link to this question in our show notes, and you should definitely check it out. Like, they mention running a superhero game, but whenever they get into combat, they play HeroClix instead of Mutants and Masterminds, I think is what they're using, mm-hmm. which is kind of a cool idea. So you should check out the question for sure. There's a little bit of extra info in there.
Dope. Yes, we will post that in the show notes.
Cool. You can also find all of us under our Experience Pointers podcast Twitter page, which is EXP Pointers Pod. So follow us there, and we post lots of things. We let you know what's happening. And we also release our podcast about a week early on the Saving Throw Show Patreon for $10 backers and up. So if you want, you know, to get early access, that's really good way to do it.
Yeah, if you literally cannot wait to hear more from us while you enjoy your fine steak dinner at your nearest gourmet restaurant,
yep.
then you might consider becoming a Saving Throw Patreon.
You know, if we keep this bit going, we're going to have to record one of these at a steak restaurant at some point.
I would love to do that.
Let's
that would
do it. Amazing.
I'm a fan of steak.
Dinner for three, please.
I like it.
Also, you can shoot us questions at that Twitter for the podcast as well at EXP Pointers Pod.
Yes.
If you have any questions about your game or questions for us or anything like that, feel free to reach out. We are happy to engage in dialogue.
Please
with you.
Do. And if you send us some questions, we might use them for the questions of the sode at some point. I mean,
yeah.
if you have some questions
Absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would love
We're
to.
We're committing to that for a title of the segment?
Yes.
Question of the sode?
Okay,
it's
cool.
Done.
That's right. happening.
Cool.
In
yeah.
stone.
Nice. Good.
Yeah.
I just wanted to check.
But also follow at Saving Throw Show there on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you can catch up. We've just started a bunch of new RPG shows. We've got something almost every day of the week, and it's only going to get more and more and more. So if you like RPGs and you want to watch some crazy people play some, that's a good place to go.
Yeah, and also we appreciate you guys listening. If you enjoy our podcast and you like it, you want to hear more, we definitely appreciate you guys sharing it, putting the word out. You can give us a rating on iTunes or wherever it is that you find the podcast and listen to it. That always helps make us more visible so more people can find us.
Yeah, and subscribe. And that helps too.
Yeah, we greatly mm-hmm. appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And with that, we don't really have an exit thing, do we? We're just going to say goodbye?
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Are we holding it out?
Oh, I don't know.
Bye.